Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, after close to 40 years in service, the Elly Ethna, once the flagship of the Irish Naval Service, is heading for the scrapyard. It's probably a time of sadness for the many people who served upon her, including Mark Mellett, a former captain of the Ethna. Good afternoon, Mark.
Sean, how are you?
Not too bad. Now, you, as I understand, you've served on it twice.
I served on it three times. I think I was on the standby crew that built it. I was executive officer, and it was actually my last command in 2006.
All right, okay. And it was, is this true? It was the last ship to be built in Ireland.
It was the last ship to be built in Cork Dockyard, and I remember that day well. We were nearly finished, but the yard went into receivership, and we hadn't fired up the engines quite yet, and we had to be actually towed out of the dockyard at that time. That was a long time ago, back in 1984, and the rest is history.
Oh, gosh. And so did it have to be, there was a few bits that had to be finished elsewhere for it?
No, she was finished off back alongside the naval base, and she went into operations then and was commissioned later that year, and was there, I think it was December 84, commissioned. And in fact, perhaps the first real operation she was involved in was the actual Flight 182, the Air India in-flight explosion that happened about 200 kilometres off the southwest coast, with the loss of over 350 people, or nearly 350 people. We were very much involved in the actual search for the wreckage of that, using deep water side scan sonars.
And it was also the first ship we had that was able to take a helicopter.
It was, yeah. The capabilities back then were quite, I suppose, innovative. We had the Dauphin 365 helicopter was integrated with the ship, and we were able to take a crew with us. And she was, the crew were drawn from the Air Corps, and the ship's company were obviously drawn from the Naval Service. So we spent a lot of time working in terms of bringing that helicopter into operation, the first time that a helicopter had been integrated with a naval vessel in the history of the state. Mm. The ship was also equipped with other technologies. It had a 57mm Bofors weapon system with a fire control system. Now, a fire control system is a system using laser and optronics and radars that can do a predicted hitting point for a high-speed target, such as an aircraft. And using that weapon system and the ammunition that had what was known as proximity fusing, you didn't even have to hit the target. Once it passed close to it, using Doppler, it actually recognized where the target was. So very sophisticated, a very sophisticated ops room that was obviously designed around the helicopter, but also for air surveillance. We had a DA-05 air surveillance radar. So it was really way ahead of its time and very much on par with what was happening in other navies, in other jurisdictions.
Yeah. And what was the crew complement on it?
She had over 80 when you had the flight crew embarked. Normally, with just the naval service crew, it was around 70 or 72. But it was in excess of 80 when you had the whole flight crew. It was not just the pilots, it was air crew. It was winch operators. It was technicians. So it was quite a busy operation over those initial years. And obviously we had to take doctrinal approaches from other militaries, the French and the British. I did my search and rescue diving training in Cold Rose with the Royal Navy at that time, so that we would be experienced in terms of search and recovery should the helicopter have to unfortunately ditch, which thankfully it never had to. So there were a lot of skills that we had to develop within the service itself, build up our own naval diving team to be capable of dealing with air operations.
Yeah, and with 80 people on board, would you be aware that there was 80 people on board? If you know what I mean.
Older ships. I remember serving on the old minesweepers. Had over 20 people in a mess deck. And the only way to get into the mess deck was to climb down through a hatch and down a ladder. There wasn't even a stairs in. That was the Navy I joined. But on Elly Ethna, the hotel services, the recreation spaces, the galley, the laundry system, and the accommodation. You had, you know, in extreme, you had up to six in the cabin, but most of the cabins were two berth, if not four berth cabins, and some single berth cabins. So she was well kitted out with obviously dining areas and recreation spaces. And because she had a flight deck, you had more space then to recreate. And subsequently, you know, later on in her career, we actually built a gym in the ship itself, which brought her right up to the modern age now.
Yeah. Now, and she put in some miles as well. You were, when you were captain, you went to Argentina with her.
That was 2006. We were the first ship to cross the equator in the Atlantic, and that was en route via Rio de Janeiro to the River Plate, and then on to Argentina and Buenos Aires. It was linked up with Admiral Brown, and for those who don't know, Admiral Brown to Argentina is like what JFK is to Ireland. He is an absolute hero. He was the founder of the Argentine Navy. And he also was a key part of the institution in terms of establishing the Argentine state. So all over Argentina, there were streets and boulevards called after Admiral Brown. And in one lonely spot up the Paraná River, which is right up close to Paraguay, there was an island called Los Loreles. And on that was a school called Admiral Brown. And in association with the Mayo Admiral Brown Association, under the great leadership of the late J.J. O'Hara, we were brought a generator down to that island where kids used to take them nearly 3 hours to get to school from along the riverbanks of the River Paraná. They had no power at the school. They had no very few facilities, but we brought down the generator and we brought down some basic computers. And before we left Los Loreles, there was power to the island, to the lights, and also to the computers.
Wow. I assume it must have been a fairly big river if the Etna could travel up it.
Absolutely. Well, the Etna didn't go up. Etna stayed in Buenos Aires. We went up with the actual Argentine Coast Guard in a smaller craft. But there were ships on the 10,000 tons on the River Paraná. If you look at it, it's a major communication line right up into Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina itself. So there are massive cities up along the river itself and served by this river.
Yeah. There was a time, though, was there not, where you ran into it? Well, you didn't actually run into it, but it was a buoy and it was a massive thing.
We were about 200 miles to the east of Brazil and we came across this massive buoy, which was the size of a double-decker bus, and it was just drifting there. And we had to get in touch with the Brazilian authorities to see could we actually deal with it and sink it. And that's what we did. And we opened the fire on it. But we were only using 20 millimeter ammunition and it wasn't sinking fast enough. We were losing time waiting for it to sink. So there were these large sea valves on top of the buoy that we could see. So we sent our divers over and we had one of our engineers to open those and so that the water would come in quickly through the bullet holes and let the air out through the top. And no sooner were they on the buoy than they were surrounded by hammerhead sharks, which are actually can be quite vicious. So there was a bit of joking in that, but we got the crew back and everybody was happy with all the fingers and their feet and the buoy sunk and we did our bit of service for the Brazilian authorities.
Yes. Would it be right in this, though? I mean, the Etna's going to be scrapped now. There's nothing to replace her with.
No, there's not. But there is. I know that the government is considering a multi-role vessel and there are decisions being made on that. And we do need to create that resource. And the multi-role vessel would be around the kind of conditions that we have now. What I've seen in my lifetime is that sea conditions off the west coast of Ireland have actually deteriorated significantly in line with the changes in climate. In fact, the largest wave ever measured by scientific instrument was about 300 miles up the northwest coast of Mayo. And that wave was over nearly 100 feet in height. And it wasn't one wave, it was a series of waves. So the Navy of the future will have to have larger platforms. And I think that's in the government's plan. The equipment development plan is there. And those decisions are being made now following on the Commission on Defence, which has recommended a higher level of ambition in terms of defence resources.
Yeah, and given the geopolitical times we're living in as well, one would think it would be a matter of urgency. Mark, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Mark Mellett there, former captain of the LE Etna, also, of course, was chief of staff of Ireland's Defence Forces between 2015 and 2021.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.